You're listening to the Lowdown Podcast in association with Time 107.5, the Orient fans show for everyone.
The EFL allow the O's to continue the season after a short interval. We have our chairman and saviour, Nigel Travis, join us with Luke Saunders from Cheltenham Town to review our next fixture. Thanks to our sponsors, GI Print, the East Stand sponsors at the O's, and the show's brought to you in association with Time 107.5 FM. Plus, we ask, is Dan Happ the best young centre-half we've seen at the O's in recent years? Joining me tonight, I have Dal Halls in the studio. Good evening, Dal.
Evening, how are we?
I'm very good. You've been up the mountain, I see.
I have, yes.
Good, yeah, good.
I'm glad made it back safely, hopefully.
Thank for that, because Darren's not here, Brendan's not here, and Rob's not here. So it's just you and me. But more importantly, we're going to hear from Nigel and Luke. Good evening, Luke.
The Opposition View.
Luke, thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate that. And I think before we talk about Cheltenham and this year and what's been going on over these COVID periods, I just want on behalf of the Orient fans, and then also Nigel will be a very extreme supporter for this, is that want to thank you guys for what you did last year. You know, it's nothing more than exceptional. I think it was an absolutely emotional day for us as fans, but I think the part you played, and I know the Edinburgh family recognised that as well, it's phenomenal. And don't take this the wrong way, there was no need, was there? You know, there was no synergy with Justin as such, with you as a club. It was just really amazing, and to have that first game back after Justin's passing, to celebrate Justin's sort of memory in that way was fantastic. And thank you your guys.
No, really appreciate that. Thanks for that. And really, all credit goes towards the fans, really, and our sort of our fan group, our vocal fans. The 1887 Red Army kind of led the project to get the flag, and I think it shows what football's all about, really, that football family. And when we, and it started very quickly, I think, when the fixtures were released and we saw it was against Leyton Orient, the project got rolling. It was really good to be involved in. And even on the day, it was such an emotional day. You know, the atmosphere was fantastic, and it was a really sort of lovely kind of sort of tribute. And I was sort of filming pitch side, and when the presentations came in with our fans bringing the flag round, and then the Leyton Orient fans with their flag. And it just really was, you know, lovely to see the clubs come together like that. And in, unfortunately, for what was obviously tragic news, but that is as I say, what football's all about. And a lovely day, and also a thank you from Cheltenham side as well, because in the reverse fixture when we played at the Johnny Rock Stadium, we had our charity day for the Holly Gazzard Trust, which raised thousands for them, and Leyton Orient fans were really generous, and the club were good in promoting that for us as well. So yeah, it's a really nice connection last season between the two clubs.
I think even for us, probably that game, neither of us cared what the result was. It wasn't one of those games where we go, oh, we want to turn them over. Both sides thought, we just want to be there. And I think that was it. I just, on a personal note, I was walking towards the ground. I got the train that day. I remember it vividly. And as I got closer and closer to the ground, and you could see the Cheltenham scars and the Orient scars on people, it was quite a buoyant atmosphere, but it wasn't the same. Yeah. And when you got in to the ground, it wasn't the same. And it was like, I don't know what it was like. It was just really strange. But at the end of the 90 minutes, we came out victors, and it couldn't be anyone else except for Justin's last signing, Josh Wright, to score. And I think you contributed, giving your team a couple of red cards to sort of help us out a bit, which is nice, you know. And then the return fixture in sort of just after Valentine's Day, you give it back to us. So that's what football's all about. And then, as you said, we probably didn't care too much, you was a bit at your ground, because we was helping you support a good cause as well. So both teams have a couple of games in, so we can't say, well, the mid-table and what's going on, because reality is two games in. I think we're 12th, you're 16th as we speak tonight. I think you brought in a few signings this summer. If I'm right, I think about eight signings. And I've seen just recently you signed Tom Seng in from loan till Christmas, I think, from Cardiff. And what I know of him, and that's limited, is a pretty amazing talent. So What's going on behind the scenes at Cheltenham? You know, is it a rebuild or is it just to grow what you had?
I think it's definitely sort of to build on what we had last season. I think a lot of the key members of the squad have been kept on, sort of the team with the best defensive record in the division by quite some way before the season sort of was halted. And keeping those key players. Ryan Broom, probably the standout performer with attacking contributions, went to Peterborough. And the club have done, you know, really well in getting sort of filling that gap and bringing in some players. Liam Sercombe from Bristol Rovers, I think, is an excellent addition. And Cheltenham fans are already starting to see what he can bring to the club. Sort of another senior player who's been there, done that in League Two. And he's a good sort of personality to have down the training ground as well. And two lads from West Brom, Finn Azaz and Josh Griffiths, come very highly rated. Griffiths is 6'7", and he, I think he's just signed a long-term deal with West Brom. So the one thing Cheltenham got really well with last season was making loan signings that made a difference to the team. And I think from what we've seen, even though it's only been two games, although there's been five matches in all competitions, it looks like most of these loanees are going to be strong again to add to that team again this season.
You talk about West Brom. Is there a connection between Cheltenham and West Brom?
I think it's something that's been growing off the pitch with Midlands clubs. So we had a player that was this very highly rated, Jake Dore-Hayes from Aston Villa last year, and he's subject to a lot of interest from League One clubs. And also, we've had some friendlies against Wolves, and there was also a friendly last summer against Leicester, who brought a very strong team down to the stadium. So I think just building that relationship with Midlands clubs, you know, I'm sure Leyton Orient may have that with a few clubs around London. And I think it's good to use those local sort of contacts. And these two lads from West Brom hopefully can have a really strong season.
Yeah, we've got a good connection at the moment with Spurs. We let them go through to the next round of the Carabao Cup. So that's what relationships are all about, isn't it? You know, you just sort of backing down and letting someone else go through. So before I get on to the sort of the commercial element of what's going on, especially the impact of Corona, the COVID sort of disruption is bringing us all, who's the one or two players to look out for this season, especially Saturday, but beyond this season? A couple of guys you've signed.
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned with Sercombe, certainly is someone that will be pulling the strings in midfield. But the thing is with Cheltenham is, I mean, already this season there's been seven goals and all of them have been by different scorers. They're a team that have got sort of power in all areas of the pitch, really. But in terms of sort of threats, if Alfie May is indeed fit again to play, striker we signed last January, if I remember rightly, from Doncaster. He had 6 in 12 last season. And I think, you know, as a forward on Saturday, he'd be the one to look out for. Always pressing the back line. He's a quick player. He gets into good positions. So he'd probably be the one. And maybe Liam Sercombe playing just behind him would be the ones to watch out for.
Sorry, I put myself on mute by some stupid reason. But there you go. That's how bad I am as a presenter. The playing staff sounds good. You know, it sounds like you've done some great stuff, especially after such a great season, although a little bit disappointed at the end last year. Commercially, the COVID disruption that's been affecting the whole of the football community, what's the impact been like at Cheltenham?
I think it's probably the same as most clubs, to be honest. I think it has hit the club hard. And at first, I don't think it was too bad. But again, with time, there was that knockback recently, a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago, with fans sort of being delayed to come back in. We were set to have a pilot event the weekend for the game against Grimsby, which ended up being postponed anyway. But that was a real boost that I think a lot of the off-field team were working towards, sort of making it run smoothly and then hoping to get fans in future. But obviously a rise in cases has kind of knocked that on the head for now, and of course that has a knock-on effect, because fans are the main sort of source of income one way or another into the club. So I think you have to look, and I know Orient did a few things brilliantly, like the FIFA quarantine tournament, which we got involved in, which was a fantastic thing during lockdown. But it's just just coming up with those ideas to try and generate revenue that aren't the traditional ways with fans in stadiums, like pitch side advertising and stuff. And I think sort of the cutouts that a lot of clubs have done, and that's certainly something that Cheltenham did in the playoffs. You know, that was a good sort of maker in that sense. And also sort of looking digitally towards sponsorships, and thinking outside the box, really, is the weird and the wacky and wonderful is the way to try and go at the moment, because it is unprecedented times.
I think Daniel Macklin, as CEO, is absolutely had the biggest wacky and wonderful idea. So don't know if you're quite sure how the whole Harry Kane sponsorship came about, but we do know where it started. It started in Daniel Mac's shower. He was having a shower and one day thought, wouldn't this be a great idea? And guess what? We've got Harry Kane sponsoring us. We've great, fantastic, three great charities on our shirt. So weird and wacky is definitely there. I think us as well, we've done dining out pitch side over the summer months. Not quite now as the winter set it in. So we're having to be creative, you know. And as you say, the traditional sponsors are still there. We still pay their money to put a ball pitch side, programs, what have you, but it's that match day revenue, isn't it? Without the fans in the stadium, you're losing so much, and so much that is having a big impact on not just Cheltenham Town, probably your local businesses, the people, your caterers, etc., etc. It's such a shock, and we all hope, and we hope it's sooner than later that we get back into the stadium. Even as as I said, you're talking about the trials we're going to be running. Even if it's a limited amount of fans, it's still people going to the game, supporting the player, supporting the club, putting some money back into the environment. But we all pray, and I mean that sincerely, that it's all better for all of us. So we're playing Saturdays. This is just something we can just fly by and not talk about much. But there's a game Saturday, and as you appreciate, we've had a little bit of our trials and tribulations over the last week or so. I don't think you played either. So I think both sets of fans would be hungry for the game, which would be really interesting. But before we talk about the game Saturday, I just want to sort of look past Saturday. Forget the EFL Trophy, etc., etc. Just look at your next five games. So when I looked at the who you're looking to play, say Crawley at home, who in fourth. You had Southend away, which is in 24th. I will not laugh, I promise you that. But they're having difficult times anyway, aren't they? So we can talk about that as well. Scunny at home, who are 14th, which is, again, mid-table like us. Mansfield at home, who should be up there in, I think, the opinions, a lot of people, in 19th. And then we have Port Vale away, who are second currently. Out of that, sort of those five goals, where do you think your points are going to come?
To be honest, it's really hard to say at the start of the season, and certainly that the League Two is such an inconsistent division. We've seen some sort of strange results so far. Morecambe could go top on Saturday, but they also lost their second game 5-0 at home. It's a real strange kind of start to the season. But if I were to look at those fixtures and think, if Cheltenham can get back to playing the way they did at home last season, they should hopefully pick up close to maximum points at home, you would hope. That being said, I do look at those fixtures, and I'd probably pick out after Saturday being what I will think would be a really tough game. Looking at Port Vale, I think they were really motoring last season, and they could have perhaps snuck in the playoffs if the season had finished. So that is a real tough place to go. And we played them three times last season and didn't manage to beat them. And John Askey's got something really good going there. So I'd say them and maybe Mansfield. We managed to get the better of Mansfield twice last season, but we all know they've got a bit of financial backing, and even again this year, and they'll be expected to push on and certainly put last season behind them and get up there again this season. So probably those two would be the toughest games out of those group of fixtures for me.
Just to let you know, when we interviewed, I can't remember the gentleman's name from Mansfield a week back, and I put a comment to them and said, look, you've got a bit of cash. And he goes, no, you haven't got any money. So I thought, okay, I'll let you have that one, but you look what they've done over the last couple of years, and they've had great investment from their owners, and their owners are doing all the right thing. So we get to Saturday. I wanted to talk about the score, etc. Who do we need to look out for on Saturday? Because I think, as I say, you've had some good signings, a couple of players you mentioned, so we'll park those. We know who they are. Who else will in that squad do you think and we should look out for? And secondly, formation wise, how do you think you'll line up?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think from what, since Michael Duff came in, he after his first 10 games, he switched to 3-5-2, and we've played really that way ever since, and that's been since sort of October 2018. So it will certainly be a back five on Saturday, and that they do tend to tweak it during matches sometimes, but we certainly will start that way, I think. And other than the players I've earmarked, I mean, Finn Azaz from West Brom looks like a really creative player in midfield. He'd be one to watch out for. But another thing with Cheltenham is the set piece threat that the centre backs do bring. So Charlie Raglan, Will Boyle, and Captain Ben Tozer, they do tend to get up for set pieces from corners. And with Chris Hussey, who many would say is one of the top fullbacks in the division, his delivery from the left hand side could be really key on Saturday. If he gets a few good balls in the box, then there may be a sort of a good chance of one of them perhaps ending up in the back of the net. So I'd probably say away from the forward area of the pitch, the left hand side and Chris Hussey's influence on the game will be quite key on Saturday.
I thought you were going to say there's going to be a bloodbath, so I thought, oh, please don't say that. But as for once, Orient not renowned for years to be a set-piece team. We've never been very good at it. But this year, we brought Danny Sender in as our assistant coach to Ross, and we've been really improving, you know, in our set pieces and the deliverables and the outcome from it. So when you create that set piece area in a game, you want to actually capitalise on it, not just go, you know, go, that ball's going out for a throw in or a goal kick, what have you. We're utilising that, which is really pleasing to see, and I hope to see the Orient do well like that. But we're going to go toe to toe with another team who are well versed in that space. I think, I mean, going past sort of this Saturday and the rest of the season, and after such a great season last year, which unfortunately fell away at the last element, what's your sort of expectations as a fan, as a club, for this season, do you know?
I would probably say many people will look and go, let's sort of go again. But I think that the sort of message from sort of the training ground and sort of the team is to sort of get your head down. We're not guaranteed to be up there again. We have to work so hard for every single point again. So, but I would still hope that we can get back into the top six. And I think many fans would hope that as well. But, you know, football, things change in football. But the key thing is the continuity from last season. I know Leighton Orient, another side that haven't made too many changes from last year. And I think in the long run, you see teams like Bolton, etc., making a lot of signings, and everyone's saying, oh, they're going to be up there, Mansfield. But they take time to gel. And I think teams like Cheltenham and Leighton Orient may be in for good seasons because of sort of keeping that group, core group of players together and building on that. So I'd like to think going for top six would be the target.
I think this season, that's a valid point, especially with the lack of fans. As you know, the fans in the stadium sort of raised the game. Yeah, so, but if you've got that continuity and you know the guys around you, the fan involvement is always going to be, of course it is, but it's not as important as a new player in a new club, because you want to impress, don't you? So even if you're not doing so well, you're getting the fans on your back, so you're trying to do better. You don't have that when you're playing behind closed doors. So I think that, as you're right, we pick out Bolton, but they're just one of many who've well recruited in the summer. I think they're going to struggle initially because of that nature, not just because they don't know the players so well next left and right of them. It's just they don't have any other elements to their game that's going to drive them forward. So I think we can't judge. Two games in for us and two games in for you, you really can't judge. I think even this year at Christmas, I don't think that's going to be a mark, because we've not played enough. We would have played a load of games, but it'd have been different this year, wouldn't it? Yeah, Saturday, Tuesday. And for that, that's going to sort of give us more pressure, different players playing, not the same continuity you would have done in a normal season. So I think it's just going to be literally hold on to your seat and watch the ride this season for all clubs, and just see where we all get to the end of it. And so pleased, so pray, sorry, again, is that we get inside the stadium. So I really thank you for coming on. And as I said right in the beginning, thanks ever so much for you and the Cheltenham fans for all you've done since Justin's passing. And I think we'll continue to have a friendly relationship except for two games a year. I can't let you go without a score prediction. And I'm not just going to ask you for a score prediction. If you're going to say you're going to score, I'm going to get from you who's going to score, and then I'll drop you a text on Saturday afternoon. So what score prediction, and who do you think is going to score if you are going to go for any form of goal?
I'm gonna say a real tough game, as I said before. So I'm gonna go with 1-1, and I think from Charlton's perspective, goal scorer Andy Williams, the experienced striker, to get another one after bagging at Tranmere.
Right, Andy Williams. I'm writing that down. Andy Williams must phone Luke at 5:45 to tell him he's wrong. Yeah, so what I do, Luke, is that if you listen to the show or my mates here, all I talk about, I just say 2-2, just makes it easy, you know. I only have one thing. We do win, lose, or draw, the type start of the season. So we get 10 games up, and I get two of the guys on the panel to give their score, and I just put my rubbish scores at the end of it. I'm useless at picking results. But the one score I did say Ross Osorio, a young striker, will get a hat-trick at Walsall last week. So I'm hoping he's listened to that and gone, you know what? I want to look after old Jules because he's a good lad. I'm going to go and score a hat-trick on Saturday against Cheltenham. So I apologise in advance for that. So that's it. Thank you, mate. I really appreciate it. I wish you and your family good health. And I hope we all can sort of meet up at some point in this season. If not, hopefully we'll catch up at some point over the next season. But we may not, because we'll be promoted and you'll still be in League Two, sadly. But Luke, thank you very much. Keep safe, and thank you again.
Thank you for having me on. You know, really appreciate it and really enjoyed it. Take care.
The Opposition View.
Joining me in the studio is Dale Halls, and I'm Julian Fern. Another quiet week in E10. Welcome, Nigel.
View from the top.
Yeah, so as I say, looking at what we're going to be talking about today, we were asking earlier, is Dan Happy one of the best young centre-backs that we've seen over the Orient over the last couple of years? The reason we're asking this is with the retirement of Gabriel Zakuani this week. And it just got us thinking, who would be our perfect centre-half pairing over the time that we've seen them? Nigel, who would you like to put as your favourite back two over the years?
That's a really interesting question. If you take my favourite player of the whole time I've supported the club, which is now 61 years, I'm horrified to say.
That'd be
horrified. Glenn Roeder, I loved his calmness. I loved his distribution. And he went on to obviously great things at other clubs, and then became an excellent manager. I think, obviously, right back in the day, Sid Bishop. So we've had some great centre-halves over the time. And it's often difficult to compare players because we've been in many divisions over all those times. But we certainly had a good pairing in the year when we went up to the old First Division. But back on your point, which I think is really about Dan, I mean, Dan's a very level-headed young man. He's played 100 games, as we know. He's matured a lot. He seems to have filled out a lot, and like us all. And by the way, you're welcome in my camp now. I see all the games on the screen, so I'm all the Leighton Orient fans are doing what I have to do all the time, apart from when I get the trips over there. But sometimes it's interesting. When I talk to Ross and Martin, I often see things because I see it on the screen that they don't see in the stadium. So it's not all bad. But I think Dan's a really tremendous prospect. I like the way he's come on this year. I think he's got a lot of experienced people who help him, people like Joe Widdowson, obviously Josh Colson, Jamie Tierley. They're all helping him. And I think Danny Sender, who's come in with a background as a defender, seems to have had an influence on the defence this year. So I think Dan's terrific, and we like him a lot. I like him a lot, and I think he will continue to do very well.
I think that's a nice thing to hear, because I think as youth players coming through and we're developing our academy, and we look after and respect and see them develop, I think for me, when Dan came into the side a few number of years ago now, it seems, I was a little bit unsure, because I think, poor young kid, looked very, very young, didn't he? When I think, tall lad, but looked very young. But I think over the last couple of years and last year, I think his maturity is shone through. And we were talking about these sort of young defenders, and then we thought about, okay, you talk about that pairing. I remember Glenn Roeder, and I was always fascinated, Nigel, that how that guy could run because he's so bow-legged. But we was a, what a player to watch. But then we started thinking a little bit more modern, and it's still not as modern as it could be. But we picked out John Mackey because, for obvious reasons,
yeah.
Great leader. You can't talk about centre halves of the Euro without mentioning Dean Smith. Again, if you're talking about a player who's he played at a good level, but then gone on to be an exceptional manager, doing well at Aston Villa. And then you go in slightly in the Russell Slade era. We mentioned Frenchy or Matthew Bowdrey. And I think for me personally, and I've mentioned this before in a couple of other episodes, is Matthew Clark, as a leader, wasn't the quickest, yeah, but there wasn't a ball shot towards our goal that he would try to stick his head, his arm, his back, his leg. He wouldn't put his arm there because we'd get a red card or something. But you know what I mean? He was such a great leader, but also he'd die for that team. So there's so many good centre-backs, and we want to take this opportunity to wish Gabby all the best in his retirement. He's been a phenomenal, had a great career, you know. I remember that down at Fulham, wasn't it? Where he's really come on the scene, was it at Fulham? Yeah, they actually signed him after that, didn't they? I think thereafter, first £1 million.
£1 million.
£1 million. We would hope for some of those now, Nigel, wouldn't we?
Well, okay, so I'll talk about that in a minute, but I just want to make a comment. I mean, your knowledge of all these players is better than mine, because you've got to remember, I've been in America for a total of about 23 years out of the last 31. So we had no streaming. So I didn't see a lot of those people you've just mentioned play very regularly. I mean, I may have gone to Orient once or twice a year. I think I only saw Dean Smith play like twice. So you're much better qualified to talk about it than I am. Now, I'm familiar today because I see every game. I also know the players, and as you well know, we're a club without a hierarchy. So, you know, the players are encouraged to challenge me, question me, just the same as anyone else. So I think I know them reasonably well. So you mentioned, you know, selling and moving on. I mean, I don't want to do that unless it's the right thing for the player and the right thing for the club. I mean, I've got my mindset this year that we're going to do well. I know we've had a bit of a bump in the last week and a half, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But, you know, unlike Cheltenham that you heard from Luke, we've got a very settled squad. We've reinforced in a couple of places that we need to. I think the Cisse signing was a really big signing, and one that we kind of fought over. I won't tell you where he may have been going, but we fought to get that. And I remember saying to Martin, that we've got to make sure we support Ross with what he wants. And that was a key part of the jigsaw. We did have other alternatives, but we sat down, we looked at them and said, yes, Cisse is the guy we want. So, you know, I don't want us to be a selling club. Obviously, if someone comes along with a ridiculous number, you have to look at it. But I'm very happy having Dan with us for this year and next year. And if he progresses in the future, good luck to him, because that's the way life should be.
Nigel, that's great to hear from a fan's point of view, you know, to hear that we don't, you know, want to or need to sell our best assets. It's brilliant to hear. And also, I want to thank you personally for, you know, bringing Cisse in full time, because he is the king. And I think everyone that listens to this show knows that Cisse is probably my favourite player of the last 5-10 years already.
Who's another guy I kind of like. I mean, perhaps we have missed, and we certainly had a lot of it for a time, but we missed a little bit of continental flair, shall we say. So I think he's come in, he fits that role very nicely. I think I was really pleased that we put Sam in that game at home to Brighton under 23s. He was excellent in the deep midfield position, and I think we need some cover there. I keep giving Martin my own ideas about who else could play there, but I won't share those now. but just to be clear, I do have opinions and I share them with Martin, but I always say when I give an opinion, listen, we don't want an owner picking the team. We had that before, so that should never happen again. But I'm a fan. I'm like you. I've got views on all these players.
You talk about Sam Lim. We mentioned it about 2 weeks ago, and we asked the question like we were asking here, is Dan Harper one of the best young defenders we've had? The question that week was, is Sam Ling the new Yaya Toure? Because I actually thought he had an excellent game and he suited it so well. And he didn't look out of class. He controlled, very, very methodical in what he was doing. And I think, again, this is what I'm liking so far this season with Ross. And we sort of mentioned it to our promotion season. We had a fairly settled side going into that promotion year. And we've done similar, you know. We had Usin was in on loan, now coming back permanently. We had DJ in at Christmas. He's found the right pair of boots to wear, and he's very, very, very dangerous in front of goal. So that consistency, the goalkeeper, you know, we've done all the right things. And that's why I think it's quite interesting as a fan to look from outside in. And we all understand the financial implications that this has on any club, because it's going to be tough, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But I'm really liking to hear your view and opinion on players, because every time I've listened to you, Nigel, you always talk like a fan when you talk about the players, and then you talk about as a chairman when you talk about the business of Leyton Orient. So that's really nice, because as you said, under previous regimes, we didn't quite get the opportunity to see that. So we're going to talk a little bit further with Nigel. We're going to go a little bit deeper. We're going to ask him some questions that he may don't want to ask. Of course he would, because he's a nice guy. We're going to catch up with Nigel in 2 seconds from View from the Top.
You're listening to the Lowdown Podcast in association with Time 107.5, the Orient fans show for everyone.
Nigel, again, thank you for taking out some time out of your busy diary. Another couple of ordinary weeks in E10. How has it been for you and for probably the rest of the board over the last sort of week and a half?
It's been 24 hours a day. It's been difficult. I've been personally up at 3:30. Last week I was up 3:30 in the morning, 3 days, because you guys are ahead of us by time-wise. I think we were grossly unfairly treated. That's kind of behind us now, because I think when I look at it, football's got bigger fish to fry. But I think Jose Mourinho's even said that we were unfairly treated. Everyone I've spoken to in the football world has said the same. But the investigation will be carried out and we'll make our point. We just have to put it past us now. We had a lot of people who were positive. We had a lot of people who I was concerned about. And it's really weird. I've said this to many people. If you'd asked me to write down a list of everyone I thought was positive and everyone who was negative, the correlation would have been virtually the opposite way. I mean, we had some people who said they never felt so bad, but they were negative. So it's been very difficult. We've had all this business about, were we following the right protocols? I think we were, but in any situation, you can always do better. We've, I think, taken this more seriously because I'm involved in businesses where health and safety are critical. I mean, Dunkin', I'm also chairman of a company called ServPro, where we actually clean baseball stadiums in the States. So right from the start, when we had meetings, we talked about taking all this stuff seriously. And I think we have. I don't think anyone's let us down, but we have to find a way of improving from this. But we're only 2 games into the season, as you said earlier. We went into the season with this approach that we got consistency. We had a really, really good window in the winter, bringing in Lawrence, Danny, and who's on loan. Then we cemented that. I think we'll bring in a couple more loan players before the close of this window, just to make sure we've got enough players to fight the Saturday, Tuesday battle that we're going to have all year. And the benefit of that will not become clear, in my view, until December, January, February, when it's dark, miserable, and you've got long away trips, you've got players injured, suspended, you've got muddy fields, etc., etc. So I think our squad is going to do well. I think, you know, they've had a tough couple of weeks as well, so it's not just us. But we are a club that is built on learning from what happens. I think we've got strength, we've got durability, and we act as one.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. As I say, as a management team, there's been a lot thrown at us over you, since taking over. But that's typical Leighton Orient, isn't it? That getting into Leighton Orient, that's what you're going to get. What makes it easier to roll with those punches? What makes it easier to get past those setbacks?
I'd say two things. One, we've got a fantastic board. Kent is not only my partner, he's a good friend. We've got people like Matt who've done the role before. We've got people like Marshall Taylor who rolled up his sleeves and was the CEO when we took over. We've got my son who's brilliant on broadcasting and is the architect behind all the streaming. You've got Rich Emmett, who was my partner in Duncan and Papa John's, who when he came on board knew nothing about football, so he asked the great questions that we never ask. So the board is very hardworking, very diligent. Danny Macklin was a great signing. The CEO is, you mentioned earlier, his creativity. And then I think the person that, if I have to get pissed off about anything, it's all the nonsense on the forum and elsewhere about Martin. Martin works his socks off. And then people pick up little things like he wasn't on the Q&A last week. Well, he had good reason for not being on the Q&A. We don't have to explain where he is all the time. Martin works his backside off. He's involved in everything we do, the academy, which is clearly very important going forward. We talk about Dan, but Martin is, and Lewis Spencer, who runs the academy, have rebuilt the academy. And remember, when we're in the National League, we nearly lost it. And then, he's involved in the overseas camps and college programs, all of which are critical to the future of Leighton Orient. And what people don't see is we had a new potential sponsor, a very big potential sponsor, come in next week. They weren't interested in how we do on the field. They were interested in the diversity, the fact we have an academy that's bringing in people from all kinds of backgrounds, our community approach. It's all the kind of non-football stuff. And a lot of that stuff, even though he's director of football, Martin's involved in.
Yeah, that's really interesting there, because as I say, I know where you're getting at in regards to the kind of the feedback that signed it kind of comes along after he speaks, and you can see from what he does do an amazing job. Looking at that in regards to, you talk about developing the brand, and that's kind of going across the pond. You've got the schools and the college placements over in America. How's that going? Are they getting a name in America at the moment?
Well, it's starting to pick up. I mean, we picked up a lot of name recognition with the FIFA game, then the Harry Kane deal, and then one idea, we've had the camps, which obviously this summer all got cancelled because of COVID, so that put us back. But we're getting approached now by a lot of clubs to do things with them. I mean, in the last week, I got approached by a new USL club in New Hampshire. I've talked to them, and in fact, meeting the guy for lunch on Monday about a partnership. I mean, wouldn't it be great? You've got a new team that's starting with a 5,000-person stadium, and we could do a twin deal, a bit like twinning towns, and their fans support Leighton Orient in New Hampshire, which, for those who don't know, is just right above Massachusetts. And then when they want to go and see the O's, they go over to London. We support them. We're going to support them with our knowledge. And I think these partnerships are truly the future. But what we're aiming to get to is pick up fans here and there. I mean, I coach in Wellesley Soccer. Wellesley's a suburb of Boston. And, we're a partner with Wellesley Soccer. So if anyone wants to look at it, go on Wellesley United's soccer site and have a look. You'll see Leighton Orient there. And they're streaming partners as well. So it's building these partnerships helps build the brand. I'm going on a number of podcasts in the States in the next few weeks, again, to build the brand. And it's not just, if you like, to get streaming customers and people who may, in normal times, turn up and see a game. It's also a way of getting investors. And, you know, as we gradually rebuild the club, which has been put back, and I'm sure you'll talk about it, because of COVID, we have to find new investors, people to bring in money. And we're not just talking about 100,000, we're talking about potential millions. So all this work is absolutely critical.
I really be I'd be disappointed in myself if I got you on the line, Nigel, and don't ask this question, and you'll probably even tell me where to go. How's your coaching going? Because you coach still and you do a bit of coaching. Do you still enjoy it? Do you still enjoy getting out there? Tell us a little bit about what and why as well. Why did you get involved in coaching?
Well, okay, so right back in the day, I was a dreadful player. I then took up refereeing, and the refereeing part of things in those days was run by people I had very little respect for. So I gave that up and I became a coach at 18. And I took the FA prelim badge at 18. I failed the first time, but I did it with Terry McDonald, who you may have heard of. Mm-hmm. Scored a famous goal against Manchester United when we were in the top league. I then redid it again about a year later and I passed. And the guy who took the course was Dave Groombridge, one of our ex-goalkeepers. So I've coached on and off for 50 years. I coached kind of, let's call it low senior amateur in England. I coached various kids. I coached David, who's now 40 when he was a kid. And I've now got, you know, in normal times, familiar figures at the ground. Brooke and Ian. Ian's now 15 and Brooke 13. I've coached both their teams. And I'm still coaching Brooke's team. It's a girls' team. We play in Bays, which is the Boston area youth soccer. We went up 9 divisions this year because we absolutely walked away with our league last year. First 2 games we've won 1 and drawn 1. We play right now. Every game the girls play in masks. I coach in masks. We don't have any throw-ins because you're not allowed to handle the ball. It's kind of weird, but the most important thing is the games are like 95% normal. So I'd love coaching. And even though I'm 70, I think I'll still find a way of doing it 10 years' time.
Good man. And just quickly then, so I take it you applied for the assistant manager job at the Orient when it came up this season. you've got a great credential. I would have signed you straight away. We talked earlier about... Sorry, Nigel. Sorry.
I was just going to say, no, Ross rejected me.
Right, we give him a call after, you know, we're giving him a dressing down. So we're going to talk about the position financially and what's COVID has affected us, and probably not going to go over old ground because I think you've been open with us as fans fairly recently. But one thing I want you just to run past you is sort of... We through setbacks, we've had a number of setbacks, haven't we, over the last couple of years, some of those have been sort of very, very, very deep and heartfelt and very, very sad, you know. So, but have you felt, so every time we've got a setback, we get closer, yeah? And what I mean by that is the players, the staff, the management, the fans, because I was talking to Dal before we came on air with you, and I absolutely wouldn't be doing things like this, talking about Orient 5, 6, 10 years ago. I probably wouldn't talk to Dal if I was honest, because Dal's only another fan. He sits 6 or 7 rows behind me. Any reason I know him because he shouts to him. You can hear him. And Darren does the show, and then Brendan, who does, I think he works down the Orient as well. We get involved. It's like that family, and that's just 3 or 4 of us here. Do you feel that, especially as the owner of the club, do you feel that is something that is for us is so powerful, because that seems from the outside in? And do you think we're quite unique with that?
I'm not saying we're unique. I mean, I think there's some great football clubs. I mean, I'm pretty close, as you know, to Liverpool. I think they've got a great culture. And it's interesting that Mike Gordon, who... under John Henry, is the guy who runs Liverpool for Fenway Sport. Talk about Leighton Orient and Liverpool at school. It's kind of bizarre. I think, obviously, culture is important to me. That's why I wrote a book on the subject. But right from the start, we had this attitude that we had to work all together because we got the club on the 22nd of June. We had to throw a squad together. And by the way, going back to Dan Happy, here's the true story. Martin said to me, like, week one, I never heard of this kid called Dan Happy. I said, I've seen him play. I said, under the prior regime, I used to get the streaming and I saw his debut. I said, I think he's a talent. He played left back. Well, they got him down as a centre half. Well, he played very well, based on what I see. So I put a good word in from Dan right from the start. but I think, you know, we had to fight then. And did we screw up a few things? Probably. I mean, some players didn't work out. Steve Davis didn't work out. Great guy. What a great guy he was, Steve Davis. And so you learn. And I think we've become resilient. But probably the big thing was just in passing. And I will never forget. I had at the house here, because we do this, I think, well-known annual trip, which we didn't do this year, where players and coaches come over. I had Ross at the house, Martin at the house, Josh Colson, Craig Clay. And we've been to see my girls play soccer, funny enough. And then we heard the dreadful news that they'd taken Justin off the ventilator. We then had to tell the players, which is the single worst meeting I've ever had in my life. But I think that all brings us together because we've got shared experiences. We then had, obviously, our debacle with who we were going to appoint as head coach. We learned from that. And going back to Danny Sender, the reason that Ross rejected me is he talked to all of us about what we should learn from it. And I think that's what you do when you have setbacks. You go down the mine, you say, how can we do things better? Ross took that as a case study and he learned from it. And I think his recruitment process on Danny Sender was absolutely fantastic. And Danny so far is excellent. And then, you know, we had the events of last week. What most people don't know is we have an employee meeting. We had it when we were off every week. It's now every other week. We treat players as though they're employees. How many clubs do that? They're encouraged to have views and criticise me. As you know, no one's allowed to call me chairman. I think it's the most obnoxious title in the world because it says you're better than others and we're all in it together. So I think we've come together and, you know, I still talk to people who've left the club, you know. Is Macca going to move or not? I'm interested in that. Yeah, I've got some financial opportunities there as well. But you know, they're all part of it. And even when, sorry, I've forgotten his name, George from last year, you know, he appeared against us, Tottenham under 23s. I wrote to George and said, you know, he'd done a fantastic job, which he did. And he's always welcome at the club. I mean, that's how you build a club. You build a reputation because all these players talk to everyone else and we're proud of what we've done. Are we perfect? Certainly not. Can we do a lot better? We will. And I'm kind of excited about the future. We've just got this COVID thing in the way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because this season with the COVID restrictions, obviously not being able to get into the stadium, it's caused the fans to have kind of a change of routine as well as, you know, everyone else. Do you still get that feeling match days when you wake up? You know that it's going to be, you know, it's match day and you get that excitement. And what's your routine on a match day?
Well, yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, at the moment, because I coach at 9 o'clock and the game's at 10 o'clock, I'm starting to miss the first half, but this week's game is 4:30, so I won't miss it. It's funny, I probably don't get as excited as I used to as a fan because I feel I've got more control, though I haven't, if you know what I mean. Isn't it? But no, I'm still excited. I tend to watch the games with Ian. As he hasn't been to the stadium for some time, he's now bigger than me. So we sit downstairs, we've got the big, we take it from the computer onto the big screen, we sit there, we do what you do, we shout at the players. I mean, instead of shouting, Happy, you know, you idiot or whatever, you know, you say Dan because you know him that well, right?
Yeah.
And then when we score, Ian and I do these mega hugs, and 2 weeks ago when we scored one of the goals, because we've scored quite a few goals so far this year. Ian had banged his foot the night before, and I trod right on that foot as I was jumping up and down with him. But you summed it up. I'm a fan. I mean, Leighton Orient's very important to me, and I'm passionate about it. And, yeah, do we try and run it properly as a business? Yes. Are we going to improve a lot down the road? Yes. But I'm a fan. I mean, some of my greatest memories are, like, when we went up against Bury 1-2-0. Bury, they were in League 2, which was the equivalent of the Championship then. And I couldn't speak for a week. I mean, I love owning Leighton Orient.
How many times in your time looking after us as our leadership have you had to take off your fan hat and put on your business hat?
See, I'm not convinced there's a huge difference. I mean, a couple of times when we've had discussions about players, but then you got Martin there, and I know some people think, why do you need a director of football? I kind of explained that. But we have this thing called a transfer committee, and I think Ross talked about it recently. And I'm a great believer in check and balance. So we use business processes for everything. So a typical discussion would be, okay, so how do we feel about certain positions? What's the contract situation on this and that? And then we say, yeah, we need to fill a position. So I'm going to make it up. Let's say we need to find a new midfielder. We then say, right, who's on the list? Who do we like? What's the cost? Oh, a loan. Interesting. And then they have to actually write a report. They have to do a report on all aspects of that player. But it's Martin and Ross that will drive it. Obviously, we've got Steve Foster. We run analysis on all these players. And it's a normal business process. And, we also have a cash committee, which is important in current times because we've got a budget. But the budget's, by definition, wrong right away, particularly when you've got a government that's running a very inconsistent approach to tackling COVID. I don't think there's any real difference. I mean, I think I'm a fan, and I've been a business person for so long, the disciplines are just part of what I do with everything. I mean, I run my girls' football team the same way. I mean, all those girls have a right to say what they think about how we're playing and what we should do. The first thing I say at half time is, okay, so what happened in the first half? And, the best answers are when they tell me.
We'll talk about that in a minute, actually. I think it's something because I will mention your book and I've read it and I want to ask you a couple of questions. But I'm just making a list here, Nigel, as we talk. And I'm thinking, I've just seen a way how we can reduce your losses this year. I think there's about 10 roles in this business you could take on. So I've got head coach, so that's a bit of money saving this. You could sort of assistant manager, scout. you've done them all. I'm impressed. I'm learning lots about you. So you mentioned numerous times over the last few weeks about the losses and yes, what happened with the game not being played against Spurs and the losses there, etc., etc. And you've mentioned the budget this year is going to be tough and you're looking for investment. And that's nice to hear that you're open and honest with the fans as you've always been. So what are the credentials you're looking for an investor? And you did mention earlier about a sponsor investor. So I'd be interested in what sort of things that you feel as yourself and the rest of the board that from an outside business coming in, what would you want from them apart from them investing?
Number one, they can't be an asshole. I mean, we've had an asshole run the club. We're not going to repeat it. So that's number one by far. I lived through that time like you did. It was miserable. Miserable. Probably the only good thing of the last year is when we won 4-0 at Newport and I was on a coach with a bunch of Dunkin' Donuts franchisees going to Liverpool. And it was probably the most exciting coach trip I've ever had. The personality fit and the fact that they are hardworking, honest is very important, is critical. Don't have to know about football. We've got enough people to teach them about football, like people like Matt, Martin, Danny, Ross, By the way, just an aside, you know, there's a lot of question marks about Ross at the start of the year when we gave him the job. One of the benefits of all these issues we've had is he's probably gone through 4 years as a head coach in 9 months. I mean, how many people have gone through what he's had to go through in the last year and a half? So I see him maturing and getting better every single week, and I've got a hell of a lot of respect for him. I think, you know, obviously their financial acumen, willingness to invest in the club is important. And it's kind of an odd period. On one hand, it's probably the best time to invest because a lot of people in the States in particular are looking at sports teams. I mean, I'm involved in a thing that I'm sure most listeners have never heard of called a SPAC, which is basically a ready-made public company. Then you go out and buy a private company and effectively take it public. Most people suggest go look up on Wikipedia SPAC and you get a better description. And, you know, we're looking at everything from technology companies to restaurants, and but we are looking at some pretty well-known sports teams and all that. So there's a lot of interest in sports, and it's a great time. Private equity firms are looking at sports and sports leagues. But at the same time, it's tough to say to investors, well, we don't actually know how this year's going to come out. Are we going to finish? Are we going to play two-thirds of the games? What's going to happen? I mean, and you know, are we going to have any crowds in? I mean, there are so many uncertainties. And I think the only way you can do it is to kind of look at things on like 3 or 4 week chunks. So I'm not sure that answers your question, but I have these great discussions with investors, and the approach I take, and it drives the lawyers crazy. I never ask for a non-disclosure because I tell the fans everything anyway. So why do you want to give someone a piece of paper when it's public information? And our whole philosophy has been Leighton Orient is kind of a community asset. We may be the owners, but I really think, you know, perhaps one day someone will come along and offer me a unbelievable amount, and we'll have to talk to the rest of the board about it. But for the time being, I get too much enjoyment out of it, despite all the problems. I think we're going in completely the right direction. Some of the new investors have added a lot of potential new investors have added a lot of value in terms of the thought processes. So it's a really interesting process.
Yeah, so just looking back at what, you know, what you were looking for and what we are looking for in investors, I think you mentioned honesty as one of the things. So is that what made Kent a perfect fit for the O's?
Yeah, well, bringing Kent on board was kind of an interesting process. Two phone calls and a night at my house. Yeah, we kind of hit it off from the start. I think it probably helped that I lived in Dallas for 7 years. So, in fact, a very good friend of mine lives down the road from Kent. But I think that helped. The fact that he'd been through a lot of football clubs, and we truly are proud of our culture and approach. Well, and at that time we didn't have it, but we had an approach. Most people running football clubs don't think about, you know, the people, the culture, and how it wants to be. It's all about, we're going to get up to League One in 2 years, and we're going to spend a lot of money type thing. I think we thought about it, and Kent was a good fit. He then got on with the rest of the board. He obviously brought significant funds to bear, which was invaluable. I think he saved us from being in a situation in the first year where we survived but had no money to do anything. So Kent was a terrific fit. I think we then realised he has assets that we didn't realise he had, this ability to connect with fans. And to be honest, I think most of us tried it like once or twice, walking around the ground and meeting everyone, then realised it was too difficult. And he had a unique approach to that. So no, he's been terrific and great friend, helped a lot. And he and I have discussions sometimes late at night, certainly late at night, UK time, saying, so what are we going to do about this? So great guy.
I saw sort of got a sentiment there because I think it was last Christmas, Christmas before last, I do lie. I'm on a beach in the Caribbean, and I get my beep beep my phone. Okay, and it's a text message from my son, who was at the time was working at SHU in Oxford Street, from uni. And there's a picture of my son and Kent Teague in Oxford Circus, Kent with his Orient top on, arms around each other. And I was like, oh, I can't believe this. And then I phoned my son up and had this conversation with him. It's quite late at night. And he was going, I'm just coming out of work, Dad. And I saw this guy and I just shouted at Oxford Street, Kent. And Kent turned around. He spent 20 odd minutes standing in Oxford Street, just chatting to my son about Leighton Orient. My boy was just absolutely amazed. He gave him gave my son his email address, and a couple of weeks later, Kent invited him to go and see the presentations, the Man of the Match presentations, things like that. Just what a guy! And going back to that piece, being able to get involved, we can talk about the games that season, our promotion season, where Kent would do first half in the director's box with their prawn sandwiches, and second half and in with the fans. And yes, we have seen previous regimes try that, and it was also false. But this is so much human, and long may that continue. So we mentioned your book, and I have read your book, but please don't try to give me 50 questions on it, because I apologise, but it was some time back. But you're successful at the challenge culture, why most successful organisations run on pushback. So I actually threw this as a bit of a curveball. So just pre-season, I interviewed Ross, Danny and Dean, and I threw this into the mix to see if they were up to speed. So when I spoke to Ross and the team at pre-season, we discussed the business principle with them, and Ross and the guys are very supportive of it, and that type of culture. Is this the principle in place throughout the whole of the club? I know you mentioned it there about your daughter's football team, and you've mentioned it slightly, but is this the culture that you put across the whole business?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Some people think I'm not autocratic enough, and my view is I shouldn't be in business to make decisions. We make decisions together. And when I think back to my 13 years as a CEO, which if you actually look at the facts is quite a long time to be a CEO, mm-hmm. I didn't actually make that many decisions. We set up processes and people come with ideas and we said, that's a good idea. And then we hammer it out. So some people say it's consensus. I think it's more than consensus. It's about making sure that you look at everything from every angle. And you know, whenever I write anything, I always try and get someone to have a look at it. I mean, that's the challenge culture in its most basic detail. You know, if I write a program note, I'll usually send it to someone like Rich or Kent and say, well, what do you think of this? And they'll come back and say, oh dear, completely the wrong tone or something like that. So I think I've made it a kind of a way of life now, and we've tried to demonstrate it at the club. I think the key thing that people struggle with is so many clubs are top down, where the chairman apparently makes every decision, including in some places which players should play. We just don't run it like that. And I think that's difficult for people coming in to get adjusted to. I mean, but you have to, I found that the way to do it is to set the tone. So Jordan Thomas came in from Norwich. So every player that comes in, I send them a text. And the first thing they all do, I can predict it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I write back, my name's not Chairman, my name is Nigel. And you try and get them off on that, because I do that to get them thinking about how we should all be approached. So we do run it like that. I mean, we are so fortunate to have people like Matt Porter at the club who really do speak their mind. I sometimes get input from Barry, either through Matt or phone Barry up, and have excellent relationship with him. And you need to get different angles. I mean, and one of the great things during COVID was I got to know all the chairmen who are based in the US. We had this WhatsApp group and we had a lot of spirited debates. Now, he doesn't actually live in the States, but he's very connected to the States. Phil Wallace of Stevenage. The jokes we made about him being sent to the National League were fantastic. but Phil's a great guy. Phil's a very thoughtful guy. He's been very helpful during the tough few days we've had recently. So anyway, hey guys, can I just let you know, unfortunately I've got to go shortly because I've got to do some more calls, but
so we're getting to a natural end here. So just two more questions, nice easy ones for you, just to end this time on. So which of your current stock of players gets you off that seat or that sofa at home when you're watching?
That's a good question. I think Lawrence is fantastic. I mean, you know, having a son who's a goalkeeper, and they're all a bit weird goalkeepers. Lawrence is incredible, and that was down to Ross and Martin's background. We got him, so he's one. I think Louis Dennis, we've not yet seen the best of him. I think we saw a little bit the other day before we closed down again. I think obviously Danny Johnson's got this ability, and you know, he was pretty brutal against us playing for Gateshead, so I'm delighted he's here. I think you know, we talked about Dan. I could go through this. Trouble is, I mean, I think we've got some really good players, and I'm pretty confident for this year. I'm not saying we're going to go up. I said we need improvement over last year, and it's going to be a weird year because you're going to have teams who don't really have enough players. You're going to have teams that unfortunately don't make it. But I think we've got a lot of players that get me excited. But I genuinely, and this is going to sound a little bit silly, I want everyone to excite me, and I never really think like that.
Knowing what you know now, Nigel, would you do it all over again?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Top man. I can't let you go, Nigel, without giving me a score prediction for Saturday, because I write it down, and if you're right, you'll never hear from me again. If you're wrong, I'll be all over Twitter soon after the final kick. So what's your score prediction for Saturday?
Well, I think Luke probably got it about right. 1-1 is, I think, the rational score, but what we don't know is the response to our players. I mean, this is a really tough group. They're resilient. I mean, we've already seen that in the games we've played this year, and I think they're pretty pissed off. I mean, we had a game taken away from us. For some of them, it was the game of their careers. I watched their faces when they asked me, do you think we're going to get a chance to play the game sometime in this whole process? And I said, I don't really think it's going to happen. This is before that was announced. And I watched the disappointment. I think they're pretty fired up. So that's going for us. Against that is, you know, a lot of these people have been at home self-isolating, so not sure how that works out. But I know we're going to have 11 plus three subs who are going to do everything they can to win that game. But Cheltenham are a great team. I mean, you heard what I said to Luke. I think, you know, they're one of the best teams in our league, so they could easily do us. But I think the 1-1 that Luke said sounds a pretty rational prediction.
Nigel, thank you ever so much for the lads here at the Lowdown. It's been a pleasure to chat to you because we've seen a little bit more behind the scenes, and your openness and honesty is always well received. And I'd like to wish you and the rest of your family happy and good health. Love to see you back at the Brower Group when we're all back in there anytime soon. And look forward to sort of hope your teams you coach are doing well this season, and promotion or whatever it goes on over there happens. So good luck, Nigel. Thank you very much for spending evening with us tonight.
Can I just say one last thing?
Sure.
If our fans want to do one thing to help us, is to get as many people signed up to streaming as possible. And this weekend, if you know a Spurs fan, they've been fantastic. We have a great relationship with Spurs. They're not playing on Saturday. Get them to tune in, LeightonOrient.com, and watch the O's.
Yeah, streaming passes are valuable for £10 for UK people or £7 for international. And that's to you, Richie Embleton. Make sure you pay your £7. So, Nigel, thank you very much. Keep safe. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye,
thank
guys.
You. Bye-bye.
View from the top.
Well, Mr. Travis, Don't call him chairman. I'm going to have to redo our start there. So that's great to hear. A lot of honesty. And I think we've seen, haven't we, Dale, quite a bit with Nigel. He's been honest every time he's in front of a camera, every time he's on the radio, any time he speaks to us fans. So I didn't expect anything else. But we've got a few more things out there than I didn't know before we stuck in. As I said earlier, we could save a fortune. He could do all the jobs.
I know.
I'm gonna text Ross after. Ross, you better watch out. Nigel's coming. He's got promotion under his belt, everything. So what a man. We'll catch up a little bit later. We'll talk about AFC Wimbledon. We'll talk about a few other bits in a minute.
Talk from the terraces.
Well, a strange one this week from Talk for the Terraces, because we were going to have our friend and sort of co-host, super fan himself on, talking about what has he been doing tonight, not being here in the studio with us. So if anyone follows him on social media, what is he on? What's the...
Instagram.
Yes, I can see.
Damn with the kids, isn't he?
I'm not on Instagram, so I do apologise. He's having a tattoo done, and... I think he's on his other arm. He's got the memory, which is Justin, and that promotion. I think he's got Kent and he's got Nigel on there as well. And it's a shame we couldn't have him on tonight to have a chat with Nigel. I know Nigel's rather busy. And the other arm, I think he's growing the later regime, you know, and celebration. So I look forward to seeing that. But is that something you ever fancied doing, Dal?
No. I think... I don't think I could stand the pain, to be fair. I think tattoos are not for me.
I actually agree with you. I'm a bit of a wuss. So we've got Game Cheltenham Saturday, then we've got the Dons on Tuesday night. Yeah, both home games. So is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm not doing bad. I do make the notes, I don't read them. So, but we've got Ollie, I think Ollie Palmer's at the Dons now, and he'll guarantee the score, because every time he comes back to the Orient, and I'm a fan of Ollie Palmer. I really liked him. I think your dad didn't, because he used to shout a lot of things about Ollie Palmer. But we will leave those off here. So what's your thoughts, mate, on this whole fans boycott you know? How do you think we could sort of the cup become something which fans would get behind again? Or do you think, as it stands, as the with the under-21s, etc. involved, do you think it will never be a cup that those fans particularly would get behind?
I think... In particular, this season, the EFL Trophy was a stupid thing to put in. In regards to, you know, we're not having the fans at the games. So there's no real, you know, impetus for fans to get involved in going to the games. But I know they'd probably boycott it anyway. But when you look at the fixture congestion, the fact that we're playing Tuesday, Saturday, and we're throwing in these games against, what have we got, Brighton under-23s that we had. You know, it just seems like these are games that didn't need to be played. And if you're not testing regularly, then it's another game where you could potentially get the virus. It's, I don't know, it seems madness.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the current climate, it was definitely something which I think EFL should have gone park it for this year. But I bet last year and this year are going to be the sort of the same, is that we just not get behind the cup. I think it's spoilt by having those youth sides in there, because they're not, as you see them every round, they don't do very well. So it's not like they're coming in and smashing the lower league teams up. And you rather see a Wimbledon versus Orient than the Brighton under-21s versus Orient. You know, yes, they're technically gifted players, but it's a training game for them. It's not a competitive game. So I don't know the answer. I'm probably one of the idiots that watch it. I know you don't. I think you never put your hand in the pocket for a lot of things, and a pint is one of them. But I think everyone's got their opinion. And we just hopefully sometime in the future, someone at the EFL wake up and go, it's not working, and then decide to do something different.
I think the thing is, I think that these games do often give you opportunities. As you say, we've got Ollie Palmer coming back. You know, it'd be nice to see how he's getting on. And it's, you know, if he's going to score against us, it might as well be in a cup that doesn't matter rather than the league. It's another game that's on the list that doesn't need to be.
I'm starting to cry now. we can't go past, you know, without saying happy anniversary to our friends at the Outlook. I think the guys Paul and Steve have done a fantastic job over the years bringing fans included into the podcast show they do, and I wish them all the best for the future. But just make it loud and clear, Paul and Mr. Nisbaum, we're coming to get you. So that brings it out to the end. No, let's repeat one more time. Streaming, everyone. If you've not got a streaming pass or your season ticket holder, you can purchase those from www.leightonorient.net, not .com, as the Mr. Nigel Travis said. I did hear that. And Luke, you'd be pleased I can get that. So it's .net. And they're £10 for UK passes and £7 for overseas. So, Dal, that brings us to the end of another show. This one was a bit of a quicker one, but we had Nigel to pack it out. Football's back. We're all looking forward to get back in the Brow Group and seeing the boys play live. But the next two fixtures this week will help us get back on track. And hopefully it will still a little bit more of what's the word I'm looking for? Calmness back into the season. The O's continue to get great PR, don't they, within the football community. Nigel has done a great job for us. I think he's been very vocal about the EFL and his opinions. And we hope DJ keeps on scoring because he's doing it for the lowdown. Remember that. So thanks for listening all. And always remember, up the O's.
You're listening to the Lowdown Podcast in association with Time 107.5, the Orient fans' show for everyone.